News Talks Off the Ball.
7 days a week.
Thanks to Air. With live Premier League action all this month on the Air Sport Pack.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
They're very important, particularly in the outdoors, Kev, the pop shields. They stop the wind.
Yeah, JP has told me that on numerous occasions as well, yeah.
But here it's to stop people who have a what word am I looking for? Propensity. Oh yeah, propensity to overpronounce their P's, and it stops the P. If that pop shield wasn't there now,
right,
there'd be all sorts going on to that microphone. So that is the purpose of them. So, busy show. We have Pat Nevin very shortly. We have Andy West from Madrid after El Clasico last night. We had Kev at Anfield yesterday. We'll hear from Jurgen Klopp and from Sam Allardyce, who masterminded a tactical masterpiece, really, against Liverpool, and actually explains in great detail how he did it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, no. Sam was asked afterwards, how did you do this? And that was a question he was more than willing to answer. I'm glad you've asked me that, he said to the
tactical masterclass. I remember hearing a few years ago Brendan Rodgers saying that in a playoff final, Swansea against Nottingham Forest. First leg, 0-0, they were down to 10 men after only a couple of minutes into the game, Swansea. And in turn, in his post-match interview, Brendan Rodgers described how his team produced a tactical masterclass with 10 men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was liable to do that, Brendan, who's going very well again. Pat was at
Park
on Sunday.
Credit to him, yeah. They were great again.
He's had a good season. Jeff Sterling in the headlines before we get to Pat and El Clasico and the weekend's football. So he is honorary president of Hartlepool, famously supports Hartlepool. They've not been doing well of late.
No.
And Jeff is now using his platform on Sky Sports to tell Dave Jones, manager of the club he's honorary president of, just what he thinks of him. They lost 2-0 at home to Barnet at the weekend.
Let me just say, I'm wearing the Hartlepool United tie today. We've lost at home. We're in the relegation places. This is not personal, Dave. But Dave Jones, for God's sake, for the good of the club, walk now. Go now. You've got 13 points from 51. This is not your level of football. Pam Duxbury, the chairman, Gary Coxall, if he won't walk, sack him. If it means me retiring and resigning as president, I do so happily. Do it now. Do it today.
And Dave Jones has left.
Yeah. Within 24 hours of that, Dave Jones is gone, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. I can't imagine that Jeff Stelling will be the priority on Dave Jones's Christmas card list, do you?
No.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
I'm just not sure he should be doing that.
No. Vent it privately, speak to the chairman. He's honorary president, as you say. He's got huge allegiance with the club, but that's for the... Well, it's private, isn't it?
I think so.
I think so.
Dave Jones is gone. Meanwhile, we had thought Spurs-Chelsea was probably the game of the weekend, and then, of course, El Clásico happened.
Abre para André Gómez. Le sale el paso Carvajal. Va a llegar la ayuda. Jordi Alba. Punto de penalti. Gol de Leo Messi. Gol de Leo Messi sobre la bocina.
Now, I hear what you're thinking, Kev. There's nothing better than a Spanish commentator getting overly excited and screaming goal at a Messi piece of magic. And you'd be right to a point.
Yeah.
Which is why I want to bring in our favourite Spanish football commentator. That's right, friends. On beIN Sports, Ray Hudson was there once again.
Alba inside. It's Messi!
You could drop a tarantula into his shorts and he'll still be cool.
Ray Hudson.
That's your favourite, wasn't it?
I just love Ray Hudson. Do you remember Ray Hudson?
No.
Played for Newcastle for 3 years.
No, I don't know.
Yeah. From Newcastle, you might have
obviously
picked him.
Yeah, yeah.
And had a career in the States and after that and is now commentating for BeIN Sports on continental European football and doing it very well.
Yeah.
Pat Nevin, beat that from Ray Hudson.
I have to say I couldn't beat that, but when Matic's goal and I was commentating on that at the weekend, I did slightly lose it a wee bit as well. You know, it was Chelsea TV I was doing at that point in time, so I was allowed to. But, you know, the stunned amazement, A, the quality of the goal, but B, it was Nemanja Matic. So, yeah. You know, that was a big, so I kind of lost it slightly there. No Hudson, though. No.
Yeah, part of that as well, Pat, because you probably couldn't kick it that hard or as far.
I wouldn't know, I never tried to. I wouldn't have contemplated the concept of trying to hit it that far or that hard. No, I tried to place it into that. No, wild, wild strike, and no one expected it. But you're right. I mean, that was a great game I was at Wembley. But you're right. Having watched this Clásico, what a game that was. And by the way, it was 3-2. What do you think? 5-5? Probably our first score.
Yeah.
And that one, it was unbelievable. The goalkeeping was off the scale. And for all the medicine man Messi, did you see the one he missed? He came in at the back post. It was the easiest right foot tapper in the world. But he's Lionel Messi, who only does his left foot. And he missed it. So, no, it was brilliant. And he's shouting and bawling about that goal. But, you know, the dribble goal. That was speed of the feet there were just wow.
It was his anticipation as well, wasn't it? The anticipation edge of the area, reading the knockdown, getting ahead, then the little dribble past a couple. It was superb. It was just Pat saying that you're looking at his feet, and if you're a defender in that position, what do? You've got to bring him down basically and think, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to give a penalty away here because you just cannot stop that.
But you don't think he's going to do it that quickly. I mean, it's slightly beyond human ability to do it that quickly and have the balance at the same time. I mean, often you used to say this. I remember chatting to Gianfranco Zola and we had this conversation about, you know, that phrase being in the moment of, you know where everything is, you're completely in control of 360 degrees around you. You kind of feel what everybody else is in the pitch and it's all going in slow motion. And I went, I kind of felt that now and again. And I realised he kind of felt that most of the time.
Yeah.
And Messi kind of feels it all the time. Mm.
It's not bad though as well, Pat, is it, for a player on the wane, a player that has been and struggling even to get 37 goals this season as a player he's way, way past his best.
Yeah. The other thing on top of it is, you know, he's, I don't think Barcelona aren't the team they were before. I mean, it's still a fabulous side, clearly. But there were just wee moments in that game. I don't know if, again, another part of me, there was a right foot outside the right foot chip pass by Iniesta, which was really memorable of his best ever days. So there were little snippets of the great, great, great Barcelona. But he's doing it in a team that's not quite what the team was before, you know, but he's still fabulous. Wow.
I saw Sid Lowe today was saying, we've seen some Clásicos which technically were of a much better quality than this, but in terms of a game that was open all the way through, where there were chances all the way through, the fact we had a dramatic twist at the end and another dramatic twist after the dramatic twist, I thought it was brilliant. And it genuinely might be the best El Clásico I've seen. That was Sid Lowe, who's seen a few.
I think I must say it's going to be something special to beat that. Because you're right, there's been technical games that are games of chess and there have been goals scored and great players and all the rest of it. But you almost add in, dare I say, a Britishness to it as well, because it was so up and down, so open, so back and forward. That kind of added to it as well. I mean, you could watch that forever. It's one of those games that last 90 minutes and you're absolutely gutted only lasts 90 minutes because you could watch it all night.
Was it a touch more open because they're lesser technically than previous years?
No, I don't know about you, but I think Real Madrid knew, win this, win the league. Right, so they might as well go for it. They're at home. Real Madrid aren't really allowed to play any other way at home, are they? So they're going to have a bit of a go at it. And for Barcelona, hey, just caution at the wind, nothing to lose. You know, you lose this one, you know it's out, you know. You're still probably outsiders for the league, even though you're top just now because Real have got that game in hand. And I was trying to work it out earlier, you know, who's favourites, you know, who's got what games left, and they're all kind of doable games. I think Seville at home for Real Madrid, that's probably their hardest looking one. Although, excuse my extraordinary ignorance, Real have got six games left, and Barca have got five. I could only find five Real Madrid games. I don't know what the other one is. I'll need to go and search what that other one is. I don't think it's been set up when that one's going to be played yet because of all the games they've got.
Yeah, well, I know obviously Madrid have a Champions League semi-final to contend with. They've two games against Atletico.
Yeah.
And potentially a Champions League final as well. We'll go and check out what the other game is. But I think Madrid are still certainly strong favourites to get it done. But it just puts some doubt in their mind.
Yeah, but they can't lose because the goal difference is so heavy for Barca.
And the head-to-head.
Yeah.
If it's obviously, if it's level, then...
Yeah, Barca have them in head-to-head.
Barca have the head-to-head, yeah.
Yeah. The Messi winner then was also kind of sublime because he had just enough time to think about that moment and managed to stay in the zone and keep the ball down and place it.
Yeah, he placed it with real power and precision, didn't he? Knowing exactly what he was doing as he moved onto the ball, it was just Pat's described it there about knowing where he is on the pitch, knowing exactly what's around him, 360 degrees around him. That was one of those moments you feel as though as he went onto it. There was only one place it was going to go, and it was just a lovely finish. It was a beautiful finish with pace at such a key moment in the game because there was no way back from there, was there?
Yeah. What made it so brilliant is the goalkeeper knew there was only one place it could go as well. You know, it was like a duel where I know what you're going to do, and you're just going to have to do it better than I can get there.
Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, there was another passed goal at the weekend. That was at the Celtic Rangers game. I have got a TARDIS. The first finish, the first Celtic goal, that was a beautiful pass and it was a great goal, but Messi's just done with such power and it was coming towards him.
Who scored that goal for Celtic? It was a beautiful finish. The keeper was unsighted. Kennedy was it? Was it Kennedy?
No.
And he's just passed it into the net. It was such a beautiful finish. One of the Rangers defenders was in the way, and it was lovely. Lovely.
Well, it was a brilliant knockback by Dembele, and that made the game completely and utterly different because when Dembele went off, it was the most one-sided game I've just about ever seen in my puff before that. But, you know, the Celtic had played brilliantly well, and I mean, funnily enough, Brendan Rodgers was going on and talking about it. It's McGregor that scored the goal.
McGregor, good man.
And it was... His pass, it wasn't a strike, was it? It was a pass, and it was a lovely goal. But, you know, going back to the Messi thing, Messi's was coming towards him at pace. It was almost volley-like the way he took it. So even though McGregor's was a brilliant goal, and that was an interesting game, you just can't see past that one. I mean, that's a good shout. I mean, what was the best goal of the goals we're talking about? You know, Messi's first, his second. You know, Matic's unbelievable goal. Mm. And I have to say, the two Spurs goals that I watched as well.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, I'm...
So go on then. Give me your top three. Which of Messi's two were better?
Well, I'm going for the first Messi one because I just love dribbling. So full stop, you know. He had so much to do and he was calm. So he had everything to do in that one. But I'm such a fanatic of Eriksen, you know, and... I was doing the kind of pre-match and analysis stuff for Chelsea TV before the game, and they were talking about Ali and they were talking about Kane, and I was saying, forget it, it's Eriksen. Do not let him get his head up. Doesn't matter where he is in the pitch, don't let him get his head up. Got his head up twice, two phenomenal passes. He's now made four and scored one against Chelsea this year. He was now talking about player of the season, and of course Kante got it. But in my top six, I'd put Eriksen there every time. I think it's fabulous.
Before we leave El Clasico, because we're going to talk to it later on anyway with Andy West, who's in Madrid, Graeme Hunter just had a piece. He was talking to Thierry Henry, who was talking about training with Messi.
Mm.
And obviously these are the creme de la creme of players all over the pitch. And he was saying there were times in his time at Barcelona where at training, Messi could... embarrass you, and not in a benevolent way. He would do it if in a practice match there was a foul on him, or he thought he should have had a throw in, or he thought he should have had a corner and he didn't get the decision from whoever was ref in the game. He'd get really angry, he would go and pick up the ball and he would just run the pitch and do it to almost remind the plebs who was bought. He'd do it in an angry way to make them all look foolish. He'd run around some of them a few times. It was a statement. He'd go and get the ball from their goal and look up at everyone and they would know he's going to try and run the pitcher because he's angry. Little Maestro's angry and he would still do it. And you kind of think that's impossible at that level.
Yeah. I know. I mean, he is... I mean, a lot of people will make this argument, and I'm struggle. I mean, I still think it's between Messi and Maradona. And I mean, Ronaldo, fabulous player, etc. But I still think between the two best I've ever seen, that's the two. And, you know, it took a little while for me to move off Maradona, but just the fact that he's kept it going for this amount of time, for this long, and he has so many different parts to these games. I mean, I'm probably on Messi's side now, and it kind of hurts me to say, but I am. Mm. And if you're that level, your best maybe ever player the world has ever seen, then you can do it to just about anyone. Mm. I suppose you can. I heard this story once of a completely different player. I can remember Jimmy Johnston. Many will remember the name of Jimmy Johnston, the best dribbler I ever was fortunate enough to see. He played for Celtic, but he was absolutely a world-class player, and he could do it against world-class players as well, and often did. And I can remember one Celtic player telling us a story about Jinky who got the ball, and they stopped the training session after about 5 minutes because no one could get the ball off him. Hmm. They just stopped the session. Jinky was 50 at the time. It's like, what? So, you know, I think he was in his 40s, or something, late 40s, but he was coaching at the time. And it just shows you certain players at certain levels are just godlike.
A reminder, not that we ever forget, the listeners always know more. Guys, it's Celta Vigo. The original game was cancelled due to a storm at Christmas. So that is the other game left for Real Madrid.
Which is where I'm heading off to next week. I'm looking forward to that one. It'll be a good one with Manchester United.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I sometimes get home.
Yeah. Really, really, yes. That's in between your DJ stints as well. Though,
do you know, I was going to do that very quickly. I was doing the Chelsea game, and that was 5:30 kick-off. It could have went to extra time. I was supposed to be DJing in London afterwards and then doing the midday kick-off at Celtic Rangers. I thought I'd just give a DJ and a miss this weekend. Yeah. Even I have my limits.
Will you stop being so damn cool?
Yeah. I think we probably need to have a look at that Chelsea Tottenham game because it was a brilliant game to watch, and even listening to Pochettino after, I thought Pochettino was magnanimous the way he spoke in. Along the lines of Chelsea deserved to win. Chelsea were the better side. I think the better team won. But there was.
Did he say that?
Yeah, he said that after the game. Yeah.
Because the quotes I had were, they only had one corner. We had 11. If you see the stats, it was a completely unfair result.
I think he changed it after he'd gone in to speak to the papers. I think that was what it was. But I think his immediate because I think it was more just along that lines of, you know, just play it down and get away from it. I think that's what it was. But that's what he initially did say. Mm. But yeah. I thought the game in different ways. I like watching Chelsea, the way that they played, the way that they won the game, in a different way from Spurs. Spurs played some brilliant football, breathtaking football at times. But Pat, what was your overall view with how it went and the different arguments that's been made about which side actually deserved to win that game?
Well, to say that scores and more goals deserve to win, generally. Yeah. But yeah, Spurs had far more of the play up until the two substitutions were made. So that was obviously a ploy that that had been decided before the game that he would keep Hazard back and certainly would try and keep a little bit of hunger in Diego Costa as well. That was number one good decision by Conte, which none of us thought was a particularly sensible one before the game. The other one is, to be honest, you need to look at the opposition and find a weakness. And it's a classic Italian thing to do. You look at Spurs, and I consistently said during this season, they're the best balanced side in the league. They look fantastic. You know, where's the weaknesses? Mm. And I could only see one weakness this season for Spurs. And the weakness was behind the two fullbacks, who continually go forward maybe slightly too quickly. And I thought to myself, if you're going to do anything, you're going to have to go and, you know, get speed merchants to go into those sort of areas on the break. And then I watched Pochettino turn up with three at the back and think, yeah, he's figured that out as well. But it didn't work for Pochettino. And it did work. I mean, after 3 minutes, that precise ball is the one that Pedro runs onto, and he gets the free kick outside the box, which, you know, could have been a red instead of a yellow card. And then if you think of the second goal, it's Moses hammering away from Son, who is playing that left wing back role. So it was actually technically one. It was kind of tactically one in many ways. So he's got that. He's got the game where he kind of wants it. And then he brings on makes two substitutions. And if you look at the balance of where the play is in the game before and after those two substitutions, do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the old Ropa Dope. You know, the classic Ali one against George Foreman. Mm. Sit back. By the way, we've got a big punch waiting.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could have turned all sorts of ways wrong for him, for Conte. But I'll tell you what, he's good and he's also got a bit lucky as well.
Yeah, it's working for him. I mean, It was really an amazing thing to watch Costa and Hazard come on and just change the game. Mm-hmm. Initially, without doing much spectacular, just winning a free, moving everyone further up the pitch, just a tilt in, yeah. in the balance of play.
But the other thing, don't forget the other one that Cesc Fabregas quietly comes yeah. on and he holds the ball.
Yeah.
You know, when he holds the ball, suddenly the play changes as well.
There's a text in, hi lads, I'm a Liverpool fan. Just after Dele Alli scored that brilliant goal, I texted my mates that Spurs were going to dominate for years. They destroyed Chelsea for the next 20 minutes and lost 4-2. Bottle jobs just like Liverpool, or is the squad just too young and inexperienced? And
I'm come against a good team.
Yeah. yeah.
A team that's all. I mean, don't write them off now.
I found myself watching Spurs for a good 20-minute yeah. period in that game thinking, this team is serious.
I'm with you, and I just wonder, are Tottenham going to plateau? Are they going to get to a point where these offers are going to come in for an Alli, for a Kane, and they're going to have to sell? Is it going to come to this? I don't know. You'd like to see that team stay together and seriously challenge over the next 4 or 5 years, but history suggests that that will not be the case. Tottenham generally don't do that, but there has been the suggestion recently, in recent years, that they don't need to sell, Daniel. But with the move to the new stadium, and I do think they're going to have to balance the book some sort of way over the next 3 or 4 years, five, whatever it's going to be, until that stadium's paid off.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some serious offers for Alli and Kane, and I think invariably they will probably leave at some stage.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's where they would go. I mean, Alli, you could almost see him going to Spain. I'm not sure about Kane. You know, Kane, the only places are what, City. He won't go to Chelsea, I don't think.
United, and, I think, is and a
United,
possibility.
United's
yeah.
a classic, yeah. I mean, that's a possibility as well. Mm. So it's really only within, I think, England, the main interests for most of the players. But I don't know. We're talking about Conte just now. I so admire Pochettino.
Yeah.
He's made them a different thing altogether. So no, I think they'll be up there challenging. But it's just harder now to win the Premier League than it has been in quite a long time, because suddenly City are going to be stronger. They're all going to be stronger next year, I suspect, and including Spurs as well. I think there is another weakness. I don't know what you thought. I know we look at the centre backs who we adore, like Vertonghen and Alderweireld. They've went. You know, they've been really good this season. Mm. Up against pure pace against Chelsea, oh dear, there's a weakness there.
But could you make that argument as well, Pat, for Tottenham not having that strength? Chelsea changed the side but still had Hazard and Costa to come on. Whereas you looked at Tottenham's bench at the weekend, where was the change going to come from? They've had a few injuries.
Yeah.
And where is that change going to come from within the squad? And can they now entice someone of that next level to go and be a squad player? I'm not sure that can be the case as well with Spurs. It's got to be that 11.
Yeah. Incidentally, I presume when you watched Maradona at his peak, you never really thought you'd see someone that you would actually think is better than him.
Because it doesn't, you know, people do things that, you know, when you watch players doing things, you think, yeah, I could do that, or I could do a bit of that, or in my best moment, I could just about pull that one off. And then you watch someone like him and you think, nah, no chance. And I remember a couple of times, the pitches were worse than those days, so he had to do it in bobbly pitches, and the tackles were different in those days as well. You know, he got kicked a lot more as well. But I can remember watching a couple of games in the, you know, Napoli ground was pretty, it was quite bobbly at one point of the season. And I could swear he was using the bobbles. And I'm thinking, he was running with it, but comfortable with it. Mm. And that it was bobbling while he was running with it. And it's almost, and there was one time I remember, he'd done one play, I'd done another play, and he'd done a thing I'd never seen before. He played a 1-2 off an opponent to get a ball back. And it's the sort of thing that wouldn't even cross your mind. Mm. You keep it away from a ball. You don't play, you don't hit it off him to get the ball back.
Yeah.
But yeah. And it's just, so I never, that's, you're right, I never thought I'd see anything as special as that. Because I had to accept it. You know, a lot of bits of watched Pele on television, and you thought, well, okay, fair enough, Pele was brilliant, but Maradona's skills are just unbelievable. The speed of his feet. But no, Messi, definitely up there.
I think he makes a good point around Maradona getting kicked off the pitch. We've all seen and read the stories of Maradona in some of the big games when teams, 4 or 5 lads, go and target him.
Well, even go on YouTube if you're listening as we speak and just look up Maradona, Butcher of Bilbao. Yeah. And there's
what he does
to Maradona's ankle is assault. It's really quite shocking.
And I think at the weekend, he maybe brings it back to Messi. Messi, he took the elbow from Marcelo, who was very lucky to stay on with that. You clearly see what Marcelo was doing there. The tackle, the lunge from Ramos. But it's hardly been kicked off the pitch.
No.
You know, it's hardly been kicked off the pitch. That's as bad as it's going to get in modern day football, isn't it, really?
I don't know when YouTube really grabbed hold, but maybe the guts of 10 years ago, like, for my generation, I went and looked at some of the Maradona stuff and just was blown away. Because up until that point, I'd only seen the Argentinian stuff. That's what they tend to show on television. But my God, some of the stuff he's done. Like, I would have no qualms with anyone who is Maradona over Messi, because some of the stuff he's done is just off the charts.
It hurts to say, you know, to say someone could be better than him when you watch them.
Yeah.
I mean, two things. One thing, I'm fortunate to play against him, which was pretty damn good. I don't think he was trying a leg that day, right enough.
Kev played a game against Messi where Messi didn't try a leg as well.
Did I tell you a story? I don't know if I told you a story last week. I'm sure I did the other week there. Conte was talking about him to me. I was talking to Conte about his favourite game he'd ever played in himself as a player. And it was, he played against Maradona, and it was his game to mark Maradona in the game. And he managed to mark him out of the game for this one game and then break up the park and score a goal. And he said, there's nothing that can beat that. As a player, you cannot do any better than that. And I kind of told you a number of things. You know, Maradona might have been injured. We don't know that. I didn't see the game. But, you know, even a player of the top standard will say, hey, I actually stopped that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and it tells you how much. And by the way, it tells you something about Conte. He knows certain things to do that we don't consider.
Just remind me, though, did Messi score the night that I marked him as well?
Don't think so.
No.
I think you kept him.
Excellent.
I'll leave that one.
He didn't get a kick.
Well, yeah. There you go. Never mind, didn't try a leg, Joel. Come on. There's a reason for that. The reason why.
Knee legs.
A story appeared in the papers following that game, Pat, which was that the Irish team had been paid off not to hurt Messi.
Yeah, that's true. Apparently we were paid 10 grand, weren't we?
They all got 10 grand.
10 grand a man, and then there's this picture of Richard Dunn absolutely flattening Messi as he comes past him.
Yeah. Dunn didn't get the memo.
And of course, that's the hard thing. Of course, when you are that player, whoever you are playing against that player, some people will be spooked by it, but almost every decent professional at a decent level will try and have the best game they've ever had in their life, because they're playing against... So you're not only just playing against players, you're playing against players trying to be the best they possibly can every time they see you in the vicinity. So it's even harder for these guys, but still do it.
Yeah, it's their cup final. Okay, last one. Okay, last two. Ona Limerick, watch Maradona's warm-up video before a Napoli game where he does tricks with the ball to the rhythm of the stadium music. Yeah. Agreed.
That is brilliant.
Actually, on my phone, I've got a Maradona flick, which I keep on my phone.
Yeah.
I just on my phone to see it. And it's the one that I always wanted to learn. And I realised to do it, I would have to break my knee.
Right. Sean the Chef. Hi, all. Not sport related, but a final point. Could you ask Pat if he picked up anything nice on Records Shop Day, which was Saturday just gone? Support your record shop.
Matt Johnson of The. First single for well over a decade, maybe even two. So, that was the best thing I picked up.
Good man.
Only one-sided, though. Not double-sided, but it gives me hope that Matt Johnson, who was one of the great songwriters of his generation, will be back.
Excellent.
Doesn't get much better than that.
Thanks very much for that.
Thanks, Pat.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Pat Nevin.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to AIR, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by AIR Sport.
Newcastle now 4-1 up on Preston into out of time there, so Brighton will have to wait a bit longer for confirmation, hopefully, that they win the championship. We'll be talking to Chris Hughton.
That's Newcastle promoted. That is the big news from it. Yeah, Newcastle had to win tonight to secure promotion, and they've certainly done that.
Let the madness begin again next season.
Exactly. With Rafa. Will Rafa stay? I don't know. Will Rafa Benitez stay?
Why wouldn't he?
No, there's big talk. He's going to go. Yeah. Get them promoted and job done. Thanks very much.
You would think he wanted to be back in the Premier League now.
Believe it's to do with funding. I think it might actually be a ploy to try to get more funds.
I've said it before, Kev. I'll say it again. Pat Nevin, what a man.
Oh, yeah.
There is talk, and I know we've been promising to do this for a while, but like, we'll actually get off our asses and do it for maybe some bank holiday Monday football show or some Monday where it's really desperately quiet at the weekend. We were going to do a touch of Desert Island Discs about it, but with more music. So Pat would effectively, he'd come on and he'd DJ from the air, DJ across the hour, but he'd pick out, you know, he'd tell a few football stories in between or pick out certain songs.
Around the songs, yes.
Which had relevance to this song.
Yeah.
And I mean, every time I suggest it, we all say, God, that's a great idea. We should do it. But we've been saying it for 2 years now.
And you know, there's one man that would love it probably more than us.
Yeah. His name's Pat.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we've been talking Messi and El Clasico, and I think we should get over to Madrid because Andy West, the BBC's man there, is standing by. Good evening, Andy.
Good evening.
We've just been reveling in the brilliance of Messi, as I suspect the Spanish media has been today.
Yes, even the Madrid media has seen it in themselves to revel in Messi. He was amazing, yeah, incredible performance. And to think there were some people a few weeks ago saying he was in decline.
Yeah. How widespread was that?
Not in Spain. I think most of that criticism came from international media and international people like Domenech, the former France manager, who don't really see that many games and probably saw him in the Champions League. And he didn't play well away at Juventus or away at PSG. So probably they based it on very limited evidence.
But his league form has been good. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been carrying Barcelona, to be honest, this season. He's the leading scorer in La Liga. And at times, you know, it's an exaggeration a little to say this, but at times it looks like the other 10 players are standing around waiting for him to do something, and he often does. That's been the criticism leveled at Luis Enrique, that he doesn't have a clear tactical plan, and Messi's the one who's been putting the team on his shoulders.
Yeah, what is next for Lionel Messi? There's so much talk about the contract and the inability to maybe agree this contract. Is that still widely spoke about over there? Is the notion out there that Messi actually could leave?
It's a could leave. I don't think anyone expects him to. And his dad actually is in Barcelona at the moment. He flew over on Wednesday. His dad, Jorge, is also his representative that manages all his business stuff. So he's talking now to the club, the president, and people are expecting it will get done maybe even this week on his current visit. But yeah, I think there's a widespread expectation he'll stay. But Barcelona aren't going to be comfortable with it. You know, only a year to go. You don't want to let a key player, any key player, down to a year on his contract, and especially Messi, obviously.
The headline in Marca was Messi has the last laugh. And Le Sport U, is that a Madrid-based paper, Andy, or is that national?
No, that's a Catalan one.
Okay, well, they had Remember My Name, and they had a brilliant picture. I mean, the goal celebration itself was almost instantly iconic. And one photo seemed to catch the exact moment that he had just slightly let go of the shirt as he threw it in the air and was about to recatch it. But the photo caught the moment where he's just kind of unfurled it and has let go of it for a second. And so it looks like the shirt is floating by magic.
Yes, and that's the joke going around social media, that it proves he's a wizard. He's not human. Look, he can even make a shirt float in the air. It was a great celebration. Obviously, got him a yellow card, but he couldn't care less about that. And what a way to do 500 goals with a last minute winner at Real Madrid, and an important winner as well. It's opened up the title race again. And something that I think you can look at any goal, you can look at any aspect of football from two sides. You can look at the attacking play, and it was a great goal for Barca. Not just Messi's finish, which was perfect, but also the way Sergio Roberto ran 50 yards with the ball, his pass to Andre Gomez, Gomez to Jordi Alba, the cross. It was all perfect. But look at the defending. What was going on? Mm-hmm. If you look at the video and pause it when Sergio Roberto has just beaten Marcelo, and what on earth was he doing? It's a 6-on-3 break. Three defenders were back for a game that a draw would have been perfectly good for Real Madrid, and they were down to 10 men. Toni Kroos was having to fill in at centre back, and they left themselves with three men at the back with 20 seconds to go. Absolutely ludicrous defending. And even then, watch Kovacic and see how he gets back. He'd only come on as a sub, so he can't claim he was tired. He's jogging back, and he ends up about 5 yards behind Messi. If he'd sprinted back, he could have blocked the shot. Just ridiculous defending. And that, sorry to be out the bar humbug, but there's two sides of football, and it was a great goal, but it was defensively an absolutely awful goal.
I was just going to say then, yeah, Andy, you're actually killing the game there, because I think that game, probably the way it was, that moment epitomised how that game went, because it was just such a superb game to watch. And we've spoken earlier on, sorry, Andy, just about how many considered it one of the best ever in Clásico, if not the best ever, just for the emotion and just with what happened on the game. It wasn't necessarily the best tactically or
in many ways. And if you had someone like Diego Simeone or Jose Mourinho, a coach, a real defensively disciplined, organised coach, would have been looking at that game and shaking their heads because there was so much poor defending. I don't think Barcelona played particularly well. Messi was incredible, and there was some great moments of play because Real Madrid weren't closing them down. Busquets had a great game because he was allowed to. And I know I'm, you know, putting the other side of it, but I think it is worth considering that you look at these two teams. Barca are obviously already out of the Champions League. Real Madrid, not looking good at the moment. They've lost two in a row at home now. If you think, they actually lost to Bayern Munich. Mm. They went through because they got the goals in extra time. But they're not looking good at all. And for me, the form team, not just in Spain but in Europe, Atletico Madrid, I really fancy them to win the Champions League now.
So you're watching all these games. The last two home defeats for Madrid, for instance, is their form far shakier now than it has been over the course of the season? Is it a different Madrid you're seeing?
Not necessarily. The strange thing is they've gone through a lot of the season not playing that well, but they were grinding out results. They were finding a way to get results, often with a last-minute header from Sergio Ramos. But now they're not getting those results. They're getting the results they deserve, that they've deserved a lot of the season. And it's going to be fascinating to see how they react now because they're under pressure. And they've got not easy games coming up. They've got Deportivo La Coruña away on Wednesday, who beat Barcelona recently. They're much improved since they got the new manager in. And then Valencia, who have had a bit of a renaissance recently. And you look at them, they're games that Real Madrid should win. But the way they're playing, not necessarily. And there's the pressure on Zidane as well, who I thought had a really bad day yesterday from starting at the game with Bale was a ridiculous decision when he wasn't fit and wasn't playing well anyway. And then that he didn't grab hold of the team when they equalised. He didn't grab hold of Marcelo, who was next to him on the touchline, and say, right, we defend now. 2-2 is fine. We take it. Instead, they, as I say, left themselves with three at the back for Barca to attack and score that last-minute goal. I thought Zidane didn't manage the game well. So he's under pressure. And that's not just me saying that. He's getting a lot of criticism in Madrid now as well.
Andy, what kind of character is Ramos off the pitch? Because obviously we have the language barrier.
Yeah, he's a bit of a lovable buffoon. He's a committed, nice guy, but not regarded as maybe the brightest. He's from Seville. He's from Andalusia, and Andalusians are often picked on in Spain as not the sharpest. And he's got that old, funny old Sergio Ramos kind of reputation.
Right.
But for Real Madrid fans, you know, they love him because he's absolutely committed through and through, sometimes too much with that challenge, which I thought was a straight red, the way he went in with both feet.
Yeah.
So heart on his sleeve. He absolute commitment. Sometimes he crosses the line, though, as obviously, you know, 20-odd sendings off shows.
Yeah.
I do have to ask you about Ronaldo. We spoke about Messi, and invariably we have to mention Cristiano Ronaldo. What's been the feeling towards his performance last night? Because he could have had a hatful of goals himself at the end of it. Bad night for him. You mentioned Zidane having a bad night, but it's certainly for his star player. It was a bad night for Cristiano Ronaldo also. So what's the feeling out there after this game towards him? And what's the feeling been towards his performances this season as a whole been?
Yeah, so up and down. I mean, he's not played that well this season at all. And we're seeing a new Cristiano Ronaldo emerge now. He's a very different player from the one that fans of the Premier League will have been used to seeing with Manchester United. He's basically becoming an out-and-out centre-forward. He doesn't get back and defend, doesn't make those startling runs down the wing that he used to. He lives for the penalty box, and what makes him still a very good player indeed is his absolute insatiable hunger for goal. Him more than anyone else, he just wants to score. He's got that absolute desire. He's so driven to score. But there's been not too much criticism of his performance, to be honest. I thought he was okay.
It's just more so with the chance he's missed. That was all.
He was a threat.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm just saying, Andy, he's just more so with the chance he's missed. That was all. He had two really good chances, I felt. One was slightly behind him, I suppose. But you do expect him probably to score with the position that he's in.
You do, yes. But at least he was getting in those positions. He was getting shots on goal, and he was looking a goal threat. For me, he was by far the biggest goal threat that Real Madrid had. I think if you look at the stats, he had something like 8 shots in the game. So at least he did that, which he hasn't always this season. There have been games that have just passed him by, and he's not really done anything. And he's to be honest, getting a lot less criticism than Bale, although the Bale criticism is more on Zidane for picking him. And Benzema, he's another one who is really under the spotlight. He's had a lot of poor games. Yesterday was another. He didn't really contribute much at all in the game. And his backup, Alvaro Morata, is playing really well and has outscored Benzema. And there's a big feeling that Morata should be getting more starts.
Andy, super stuff. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Andy West there, the BBC's man in Madrid. You can read Andy's thoughts as well on the BBC website. Tom Dunn, hello.
Good evening. I was coming in, I was listening to Pat Nevin, and he was saying a few things that were really catching my attention. Did he mention DJing?
Pat's the coolest footballer alive. Like, Pat was DJing in Hacienda and stuff back in the day. He was a footballer.
Hacienda?
Yeah.
Happy Mondays.
Yeah.
Factory Records.
He was doing all sorts. Like, he's still DJ regularly. Pat Nevin is known as the thinking man's coolest footballer on the planet of all time ever.
Is he?
After Kevin Cabana.
Doesn't waste time, just straight in there. And Matt Johnson, he mentioned him as the coolest songwriter of his generation. It's the man from...
You're turning to the wrong fella here.
They're there. Yo.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be au fait with their work.
They're there.
Yeah. Oh, he said he bought his record. He's asked the record. He bought a vinyl last week.
It came out on
that's it. Yeah,
it was record shop day. Yeah, which I'm sure you know.
And Matt Johnson issued his first thing in a long time.
Yeah, ten years, I think he said. Yeah,
I haven't got to hear it yet.
You and Pat should do a show. You should have a chat at football and music. Sometime. Yeah. Good.
I don't think I'll be able to cope with it because I think the fact that he's from the Hacienda, that would kill me. Then there's the footballing side to it as well.
I mean, I'm 99% sure he's DJed there.
The Hacienda is pretty now. That's the apex.
Yeah. I'll double check with him.
Okay.
But either way.
Joel's throwing things out here. Yeah, we need this backing up. We need this clarifying.
Either way, Pat Nevin knows what's what.
Right. I'm very intrigued. I didn't get to see much over the weekend, but I had a beautiful moment last night when I was trying to follow the El Clasico and I couldn't see it. There was families near me and they had an iPad. Right. So I sent an emissary over to see. And they came back and said, the game is over and Messi's been booked. So I said, oh, 2-2. You know, it's not the end of the world. They got a draw. Mm-hmm. So then about 10 minutes later, just curiosity got the better of me. I said, why was he booked? Taking his shirt off. Yeah. He scored!
That's glorious.
It took that long to work it out.
I mean, we hadn't planned it, but we spent the whole show talking about El Clasico. It's just that kind of a thing.
I wonder, can I find that on the internet later? Because I didn't see it.
There's a nice 6-minute YouTube highlights version for you. Yeah,
I will find that. That'll be beautiful. Didn't get to see Record Shop Day, but I have some absolutely great music coming your way. You two, a remix of Red Hill Mining Town for the Joshua Tree anniversary tour.
Very good,
it's absolutely beautiful. Lindsay Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac. That is a pop genius of the highest order. Unbelievable.
Okay.
Really. New stuff from him. Mac DeMarco, very cool guy. And it's the return of really long records. I don't know if you know War on Drugs, great band from 3 years ago.
No.
11 and a half minute long single. Kendrick Lamar, the 8.5 minute long single. Kamasi Washington, 13 and a half minute long single.
Wow.
What's going on?
I don't know.
I have a really easy second hour.
A lot of solos in there.
Watch our classic.
Very, very cool stuff. And yeah, there's just loads and loads of absolutely great stuff that I'm working through to play over the next 2 hours because it's going to be great.
Excellent. That is on the way after 10. In the meantime, Kev was at Anfield, so we're going to hear from Klopp and Allardyce and get Kev's thoughts.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air for heart-stopping moments from the Premier League, FA Cup, Formula One and more. All on Air Sport.
Townsend takes this corner kick low and hard towards the near post, and Palace have gone in front, and it's Christian Benteke again. He heads in from 4 yards out, and Crystal Palace have come from behind to lead at Anfield, and Benteke's come back to haunt Liverpool. It is Liverpool 1, Crystal Palace 2.
That was Nathan Murphy, who had Kevin Kilbane alongside him yesterday at Anfield. Jurgen Klopp spoke afterwards. So suddenly Liverpool only 3 points out of Manchester United, and United have 2 games in hand.
A lot of people around think now, oh my God, Champions League slips through our finger again, only if we let it slip. So, because that's all I can say about this. We have to try everything, and we will. Everything. Our job is to squeeze everything out of this season, what we can squeeze. Obviously, it's not easy for us, but that's no surprise. I take responsibility for all of this. But again, in this moment, I already want to strike back, but I can't because I have to wait a little bit and but we will use the time and try everything. You can imagine everything to make the best of this season. And today it feels really bad, but only if we let it.
And here was Big Sam, who felt that his side, and, well, him in particular, had tactically outfoxed Liverpool.
With our limited possession, exposed Liverpool's weaknesses time and time again today, and ultimately that's brought us back from 1-0 down to win it. And I give the players a huge amount of credit for, first, the way they defended, and secondly, the way they exposed the weaknesses of Liverpool today defensively, which in the end they couldn't cope with, and we won 2-1.
He elaborated on the weaknesses, and he talked about Liverpool fullbacks pushing on too much, and Matip and Lovren having no pace, and balls in behind, like the one to Kabay, which led to one of the goals being their Achilles heel, and how they had worked in all this Palace. They knew this would be the case, and they executed it perfectly. It is another game where Liverpool mess up against inferior opposition.
Yeah, he spoke about Kabay. That was the interesting one, I think, because I saw Kabay a couple of weeks ago in the Arsenal game. I was impressed getting back to what he was perhaps doing at Newcastle, more of that attacking midfield. He's the first one that tries to get in support of Benteke. The Palace goal was a brilliant goal, excellent goal. The cross from the ball forward from Joel Ward first, the cross from Kabay, and then the finish from Benteke. It was a brilliant goal.
Yeah,
but it was a disappointing game. It was a disappointing game to watch. Liverpool had, they must have had 70% possession at least, Joe, and they didn't do anything with it.
What do they try and do when they have the ball just inside the Palace half? Palace are set. What's the Liverpool way?
Well, I tell you what, Joe, it's a great point about you asking that question, I think, because it's how do you try and manufacture space on the pitch when teams are playing so deep against you? We've spoken last month, 2 months, whatever it is, about teams playing against Liverpool. The blueprint is drop deep. Liverpool won't be able to open you up. And Liverpool have played the best football against the top six. It's no coincidence, because all those sides are going up against Liverpool and they've got a bit of space. Sides that sit in deep against Liverpool, Liverpool find it difficult. But what you find with, particularly at the weekend, they had Origi's playing through the middle. So Origi's playing as a nine and they've got Coutinho and Firmino off him. Origi, all he wanted to do was get involved in the play.
Right.
So all he kept on doing was he kept on coming towards the ball constantly. I think sometimes he's got to maybe sacrifice himself and think, look, I might go five minutes, 10 minutes without touching the ball here, but I've just got to continue to make the runs off the shoulder of Tomkins as it was yesterday, and off the shoulder of Martin Kelly. He just didn't do that. Didn't do it at all. All he wanted to do was face up. I don't think that's his strength anyway. I think he needs to be going the other way. Now, I know in the lack of space that he had, and you think in your head, maybe people that's listening as well, they're camped on their 18-yard box. Where is the space? Anyone that watches someone like Luis Suarez, and I know maybe that is a different level of striker, but you watch Luis Suarez. Luis Suarez will constantly make runs, even if it's in the 18-yard box. And what it does, it just puts them back an extra yard, the defence, continuously looking over the shoulder, drops them a little bit deeper. That then frees up Firmino and Coutinho, where they come inside and into outside number 10s, inside forward, whatever you want to say, the position that they take up when they play in that three. It frees them up. And they didn't get enough ball. Coutinho was excellent yesterday. Firmino and Coutinho, if Liverpool were going to get anything from the game and win the game, it would come from them. But I think the problem certainly stems from that number 9. I think the number 9 playing for Liverpool at the moment, when they're playing against those sides, whether it's Origi, whether it's Firmino, because I think Firmino has a tendency to drop too deep as well and not be the focal point of the side, continuously looking to drop deep.
Okay, interesting. Might pick up a bit more on that tomorrow and talk Arsenal City as well. Tom Dunn is on the way, as you know, and we'll be back tomorrow with a busy show at 7. Good luck.